Informative, interesting, intelligent. President and CEO with the Tucson Metropolitan Chamber, Amber Smith with News from the Chamber.
Hello, and welcome to another segment of News from the Chamber. That's the Tucson Metro Chamber, hosted right here at the Stewart Title Studios on Broadway Boulevard. I am Amber Smith, the President and CEO of the Tucson Metro Chamber. Over at the Chamber, we have been addressing some significant issues such as workforce development. According to a new 2018 skills gap study from Deloitte, conducted with the Manufacturing Institute, 2.4 million jobs will go unfilled over the next decade. And according to Forbes magazine, the growing shortfall can be attributed to an education system that produces too few graduates grounded in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics disciplines. Realizing that the speed of technological change, companies are now recruiting college grads for positions that might not even exist, and they're looking for candidates with transferable skills, which is defined as their problem-solving or analytical ability. Over here at the Chamber, we have been meeting with our constituents, including our partners over at the University of Arizona with President Dr. Bobby Robbins, who referred to this phenomenon as the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Companies are looking to locate in communities that will attract tech-savvy workers who value a strong work-life balance. That's what we're looking for here. We're looking for millennials, who are also the largest generation in the U.S. workforce, and they are driven to communities that have plentiful amenities. So finding and retaining qualified workers has been identified as one of the absolute biggest obstacles to the success of business and the overall growth of our local economy. This is a huge issue that is not unique to our community, so we have with us today to address this challenge head-on at the Tucson Metro Chamber. It is a variety of qualified folks to help us solve this problem. Joining us in the studio today to discuss these issues and more is Devin Underwood, the owner of the Talent Store and co-chair of the Chamber's Talent Recruitment Task Force, and Dr. Ian Rourke, the Vice President of Workforce Development at Pima Community College. And, like always, joining me also is my on-air sidekick, Michael Guyman, the Vice President here at the Tucson Metro Chamber.
Hello!
Good afternoon, Michael. So why don't we start here for a second? Devin, why don't you give us a little bit of a background about the Talent Store so we can be able to let our audience know about your skilled background in this area?
Sure. Yeah, I came from executive search and recruiting nationally, and then moved into some companies, some larger companies that were really growing and scaling, and helped them develop a talent program. So as I started to go out on my own, I thought just doing recruiting or throwing resumes at companies was a Band-Aid to the real problem that's going on. It's a huge challenge. In order to be competitive and in the long term, companies really need to address talent strategy holistically. And so the Talent Store was built to help people find key leadership. You know, we're still recruiting, we're still placing important positions, but also then looking at their entire strategy from talent attraction to acquisition. How are you interviewing? How are you vetting? And then to retention. What are your career paths? How do you develop your employees? Do you have a strategic vision of where a position can go within your company? And so that's what we're trying to address at the Talent Store.
So, Dr. Ian Rourke, may I call you Ian?
I would prefer, Amber, to be called Ian.
So talk to us about your background and Pima Community College's role in the area of workforce development.
So briefly, I have been in career technical and workforce education going on 15, 16 years prior to coming to Pima Community College in March of 2015, so almost 4 years ago now. I served as the dean and then executive dean of career tech and workforce education at a West Texas college, Odessa College in West Texas, in oil and gas country. I've since served Pima Community College as the Vice President of Workforce Development, and my team and I, our role at the college is to ensure that we are aligning at a strategic level the college's priorities to meet the workforce and economic development priorities of the region, and at a tactical and local level, making sure that we're meeting employers' needs as they engage with us, all the way from just helping them find qualified candidates within our programs of study, starting internship programs, all the way up to complex multi-organizational workforce initiatives.
So with you and Devin here, it's the yin and the yang. So Devin is working with the employees and employers. And then Ian, you are representing trying to train those employees and addressing those employers' skills gaps.
Correct.
So Devin, what would you say are the top three workforce challenges that your clients are facing?
Oh gosh, that's such a loaded question, and I have to really think about what to even bring up, because it's everywhere. From every client I talk to, they insist that the talent they need is not out there. It's very short, particularly in technical areas, even in accounting, we're having a huge shortage. But I also talk to really talented people who say they don't hear back from anybody. So there's a miss there, and there's this big gap going on. And so one of it is that connection between talent and what is needed. I think also in helping an employer to understand who are they as a company? What is their employment brand? And so then who do they need? Why would this person connect with them? And then helping them know who do they actually need? Not just currently, but for the long-term vision. And so you can get a much more strategic and efficient outreach plan to attract and acquire talent if you frame your vision more strategically too. And I find that that's a struggle. Some HR departments aren't able to have the capacity to lead that vision right now. And operations probably knows what they want, but doesn't know how to articulate it and frame it in a people way. So I think there's just opportunity. The companies that do it really, really well and that don't complain about talent have addressed it in that holistic way.
So can you give an example? How would you say that those companies have been able to address it then? Just by breaking it down to specifically what the skill sets that they need, or how is it non-traditional?
Well, and actually, before you get to that, Devin, I one of the things that we talked last time we actually were here on the radio, we talked to Howard Stewart, who is the CEO of AGM Container Controls. And one of the things that he points out is that he spends on average about $33,000 a year on tuition reimbursement.
Right.
So it's one of those things that he is able to do as a company. And, you know, not all companies do this. It's great that he does that, but he sees that as a talent retention tool. He also sees it as just generally getting the employees that he has more skills that will not only help the company, but will also help them individually in the long run. So, you know, I think we have some great examples out there, but yeah, I mean,
right.
I just throw that out there because, you know, just so recently we had someone on here who does some of that work. And so it'd be interesting to hear what other examples exist out there.
And they're a company that's really creative about who they go after and who they look for. Their pipelines are unique. They're looking at people who maybe some other companies wouldn't look at. So they're open and they're innovative. And so they know, they've taken the time to say, here's really the bottom line of what we need. Sometimes that's a skill set. Sometimes that's resourcefulness, attitude, and problem solving skills. But you've got to be able to frame exactly what you need before you know how you're going to go get it. And so often it's this really general job description, and then you post an ad and you pray, right? And then you're waiting for somebody to respond to it. If you know who you are as an employer, you've got employment branding happening around you that's also your customer gets excited about. You've got stories being told about who you are and what a great employer you are. You've got someone like Michael Guyman talking about your tuition reimbursement program, but you don't know to have all of that until you think about who are we and what are we going to offer. And then you put that out there, and you put that out there in a way that attracts the right person to your culture, to where you're headed. you know, like attracts like. And then your interview process needs to be reflective of who you are. If you're a tech-savvy company and your application is clunky and weird and keeps kicking me out, I'm not going to think you really know what you're doing if I'm a tech-savvy person. So what does your interface look like? How do you interact with candidates in the marketplace? All of those things we can look at. And it really just depends on where you are as an employer. And then advertising benefits. So getting to know the industry you're in and what that market niche is looking for or is missing so you can really stand out.
So, Ian, the community college has expanded its efforts in really interfacing with industry and identifying their needs. So can you talk to us a little bit about some of those success stories and programs that Pima Community College has been able to stand up to try to address some of these skills gaps we're talking about?
Sure. And I think just to give a little bit of context about skills gaps, it's always a matter of quantity and quality, which have come up in this discussion. And I love what Devin is talking about because it really speaks to misperceptions about quantity. And I'd like to delve into that a little bit. But then also which areas we have to focus on, because in an employment market where we're trending below 4% continuously, everybody needs help, whether that's low skill, middle level skill, or even high skill. So as an institution, we have to prioritize based on which areas are prime for economic growth for the community, so that that wealth is continually churning and increasing within our community. And at that level, we have really expanded our current programming and will make significant investments moving forward into the physical infrastructure related to hard skills that either we were not offering programmatically or the size of our programs were too small. I'll give a couple of examples, not the whole list. At our downtown campus for our Center of Excellence in Applied Technology, we will be expanding programming under three large verticals. The first is transportation technology, which includes automotive technology, diesel technology, and soon to be autonomous vehicle technology and the implications of automation on the workforce. The second is infrastructure, so that is mining, utility technology, energy, construction technology, architecture, those sorts of programs. And finally, manufacturing and advanced manufacturing, which is from the sort of stalwart programs that exist at most community colleges, which are machine technology programs, welding, all the way up to advanced manufacturing, automation, control processing, robotics, optics. So we're very excited about being able to deliver and are currently delivering those programs now. The increased infrastructure will allow us to not only improve our quality of delivery, but the actual quantity of graduates coming out into the community. But what's more important at the fundamental is something Devin hit on, and that is what employers are looking for, and Michael as well. What employers are looking for with what we sometimes call employability skills or soft skills, there's actually a lot of different forms of that. But really, when we train individuals for jobs now, because of the onset of automation, because of the complexity of work as it now exists, because it is an employee market versus an employer market to some extent when you're below 4%, our graduates have to have multiple hard and soft skills across a variety of disciplines. There's all sorts of figures out there, but in general, most of our students will not end their careers in the careers that they trained for us with. So they will bounce around the labor market. And we as educators and working with employers have to get better at defining and quantifying those transferable skills so that we're not training people just for a job, but for career. And the other thing from a community perspective, and this really fits in with what Devin also spoke about, is that the days of getting educated and trained and it being a one and done, and then you're useful in the labor market until you retire, those days are long gone. So our biggest successes have actually come in working with companies such as Caterpillar, where we are actually retraining people who actually even entered the labor market at a very high education level, such as at the engineering level, but in their prior program of study may not have acquired the technical acumen or the acumen in the new technologies from an applied perspective. And so we are offering courses to retrain them so that they are relevant with respect to the current dynamics and the needs of the company and then the broader market.
You know, and I was, as you guys were both talking, What I was wondering is, it sounds like this isn't specific to one industry. I mean, does this go across any and all industries across the country and the world?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes. In another conversation, I was asked, well, which communities, which industries will come out the winner in what's now called, you know, the labor market war, the jobs war? And going back to Howard, and to put him on a little bit of a pedestal, because I think the company deserves it. Research oftentimes verifies what you already just kind of know through common sense and practice. And Howard figured out that we're not getting any more young people coming through our doors than we did a decade ago. And we may not get any more young people coming to our doors to come to our company a decade from now. So I have to be really creative about educating and upskilling my workforce throughout their entire career with me. Again, one and done is done. There's no such thing as one and done anymore. So at an aggregate level in Pima County, we have almost no more high school graduates coming into the labor market today as we did a decade ago. And we are projected to have no more high school graduates coming into our labor market for two decades out. So we have to be really creative about how we are incentivizing people to stay in our community and giving them those incentives to continually upskill and retrain so that they can have upward mobility with their one employer or have options among multiple employers within their sector, even across sectors.
Yep, that's spot on. And I think, you know, when I'm talking to companies and you're talking about, you know, they always say, well, we have to pay more, or, you know, this compensation discussion, which it's out there, right? You've got to be competitive and pay. But outside of that, investment is different than just paying more. It's upskilling. And it's also, when you're looking at organizational development strategy, are you succession planning? Do you have a career path where you're maybe hiring a layer in there and investing in it, because that's going to be the different stepping stones that you need to keep your organization going and growing?
So then we're talking about how this does span across all industries and all locations. Ian, based on your experience in Texas, are there some best practices that maybe we can emulate in Tucson between the business community and some of these efforts that we're trying to accomplish?
Yes, it's always difficult to compare one state to another. There's a lot of policy, a lot of things that are different. And then the labor market is different. So for context, where I worked—
We don't have oil money either.
No. So where I worked previously, the Permian Basin of Texas is where 27% of our nation's oil and gas is actually produced. There's a huge infrastructure and a continual need for technicians, even when oil is trending low. And so the best practices that came out of that for the college in working with some of our key stakeholders there, like Chevron, were, let's invest in the training and education that we know is going to benefit students and benefit the company even in the downturn. So if we're always chasing the upswing, we really have a big letdown, sort of like a massive economic sugar rush. And then everybody scrambles around wondering what they're going to do to be employed. And then what we do is, when the upswing comes back, employers say, well, we don't have the people. Well, it's because they left or did something or chose to do something else during the downswing. So we always have to prepare to be our best at the downtime. So the same sense of urgency that we have about workforce development, training, and upskilling that we have at 4% unemployment in Pima County, 3.7%, coming from West Texas, where we were dealing literally with 2% unemployment. That's when crazy things really start to happen. So such as fast food restaurants having signing bonuses of upwards of $1,000.
Wow.
Low-skill restaurants and those sorts of positions couldn't find the talent, so they would literally drive people to work. That's what really starts to happen when it gets low. So I don't think we'll ever get to 2% unemployment. I actually hope not, in a weird sort of way, because that's when really weird, it's really a labor market distortion. At 3.7%, at 4%, it's really difficult. But the best practice is, how are we investing in people now in preparation for that eventual downturn? Business cycles are inevitable. At some point, there will be a downturn. So what are we as employers, and then at a community level, doing to prepare for that? Another best practice is that labor pools no longer exist, and linear labor market planning no longer exists, just like the one and done is done. So for instance, employers really who come to any program of study at the end and say, I hear it's graduation time. And we get this all the time. I get an uptick in phone calls and an uptick in emails come November for December graduation and come April for May graduation. And we want to talk to your students. They're all spoken for. They have already gotten jobs or internships while they're studying with us, and oftentimes for employers who are already paying for them to get further skills at our institution. So it's really about building those relationships with the incoming class of students, not waiting until they're graduating. That's a really key best practice I think we need to hone in on.
Well, let me ask you then, Ian, because some economists are now projecting that we will have a downturn in 2020. So if you talk about needing to prepare for that downturn, how do we as a community best prepare for a downturn like that? Now, of course, we don't really know what that is going to ultimately look like. And you talk a lot about, you know, making sure that the skills needs are there regardless of sort of the industry. I mean, you know, different skills across a lot of different platforms. But how might we effectively then as a community prepare for this, something like that?
Yeah, and certainly, and I'm not trying to be a pessimist. It's just sort of the economic cycle. There's actually a lot of data that indicates that we've still got a good little bit of tread left, right, in Tucson and in Southern Arizona. So we're really excited about that. And so a downturn may be mitigated by our current successes. But yet if it comes, I think it's recognizing this term that's come up a lot in this conversation, and that's transferable skills. So how are we educating our students and our young people coming up to be post-secondary students in education and training to move beyond the idea of job specificity into what do you want with your career and what do you want with your life? And that really speaks well to the millennials that we're trying to attract and that we're trying to retain. And so when they understand and we do a better job of educating them, all of the things that they bring to the table for a multitude of industries and a multitude of employers rather than just one linear track upwards, that adds a benefit. Equally, we have to be preparing employers to recognize the skills and types of students from other programs that they may have never even considered to then hire in and then maybe just make up the difference. And so as an example of this, we have an airframe and power plant program for aviation technology. But manufacturing companies are starting to look at the skill sets of those students. Equally, we have automotive students that are now starting to be hired by aviation companies because the skills are so transferable and the gap to train those is limited. The exciting thing about it is even if there's a downturn, because of the way the labor market is now structured, with a lack of technical skill talent, there will actually be pockets of the labor market that act as if a recession isn't even existing. So there will be high demand in specific areas, while some of the other areas may start to peel off or lessen a little bit. And that's what we really need to focus on with respect to recruiting, training, and upskilling.
Do you think that you can already begin to identify which of those industries are going to have these essentially insulated pockets?
Yes, with a caveat of there's all sorts of statistical exceptions, right? But, you know, one thing that we can always bank on as a community is the impact of nursing and allied health and health science education and those careers. So there's recent expansion about Northeast and that announcement with that hospital system when we're hearing those. And that's in large part due to our demographics. And so understanding the demographics of our community and how that plays into that. So we are a community that is still perpetually growing for the age group that's over 50, and we are all projected at an aggregate to continually live longer. So healthcare is an area that will perpetually see a shortage, particularly in those areas where there's clinical rotations, nursing, allied health, those sorts of things. So that's an area that is pretty much a safe bet if I were an employer and or if I were a student. Really excited about emerging technologies and manufacturing and how the fourth industrial revolution is bringing about all of those technologies. And so there's a really good play with respect to manufacturing. And then some of the basics that we don't want to forget. So HVAC, plumbing, construction, all of those sorts of things where we may come off of a construction high a little bit, there will still always be that need. Partly because as a community, we haven't produced the sheer quantity. So in some of our programs of study at the college, our current graduation rate doesn't even replace attrition due to retirement. So even if you add in a 0.5% growth or 1% growth to the industry, that comes out as a huge shortage for employers, and they feel the pinch. And so manufacturing, skilled trades, health science, and then IT and cybersecurity, those are among some of those that are pretty safe bets for a long time to come.
And I mean, I'd just like to interject. I always think in a downturn, you know, service industries get very impacted. But even there, the ones that are going to, we're still going to need these services.
Yes.
From someone, maybe not as many of them. And so the ones that survive and do well are going to be the ones that understood what they needed to do with talent to provide the best service out there. So it's still going to be important in a downturn to be competitive.
So I want to kind of address a little bit more on the technical and trade skills part, because I was just asked this question this morning about why are trade and technical positions in such high demand? Mm-hmm. And so I have kind of my own soapbox that I get on to as to why I think that is. But from your guys' perspective, from both the college and from the employer side, what do you think has led to that?
You start.
There's a lot. There are a lot of reasons. It is not a. I mean, the list is actually rather long. From an aggregate perspective, I'll talk about our manufacturing program, and this will give you an idea. So we're a metropolitan area of 1.2 million people. There are two high schools among all of them. I think we have over 150 high schools, public, private, charter, et cetera. Two that actually have a viable manufacturing program at the high school level that can feed into the college level. So from a business model perspective of what I call now the higher ed old days, where all of our enrollment was coming from high school graduates, we built our manufacturing program on the premise or the size that there's only two high school programs feeding it. Mm-hmm. So that comes from multiple decades now of a disinvestment in the idea that a technical education is just as valuable and just as meaningful from a life perspective as a four-year degree. I've been very blessed to have four-year degree and degrees after that. But the question that I ask myself is, and I have two kids, and that is, if my son, who's now 11, were to come to me and say, you know what, I want to be a plumber, what would me as a well-resourced, highly educated, middle-class father think and say? And I think that the answer to that question from a community perspective really answers whether or not we really value technical education. So if I'm here on your radio show talking about the benefits of a technical education program at Pima Community College, and I steer my son away from that when he tells me that's what he wants to do, or worse yet, I don't even make him aware because I'm biased against those programs, that is sort of, I think, take that and multiply that out across the whole entire spectrum of how we approach where we sort of sort kids, if you will, while they're in schools, and our attitudes about those careers and those professions. And that's really the root of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think that there you see a swing, though. I think it was in the last workforce or task force meeting that we were in that I mentioned the Gen Z article that I read, and the cost of higher education really swung so high, and the debt being, you know, born from that people are carrying around has, I think, swinging the opinion back to technical skills and getting to work quickly in a different way. And hopefully minds and hearts are opening that direction.
And this is just an anecdotal example, but our aviation technology program, for instance, you can actually complete that program without even earning your associate degree. So you can earn a certificate that's 19 months in length. And people are amazed that usually most of our graduates are hired from an hourly perspective, earning about $55,000 to $60,000 a year out of that program. And they're recruited locally as well as sometimes nationally. And so for 19 months, you can start at around $50,000, $55,000 plus guaranteed overtime. There are certain areas that as we start to educate parents and students and about upward mobility and a wealth perspective and sort of, yes, there are data that show the higher degree level you go, the more earnings you're going to have. And that's going to be there for a while. But there are other routes. And none of these degrees and certificates or training programs are terminal anymore. Mm-hmm. So you can get one and then bounce over to another.
Well, and even aside from the perspective of the student or the employee being either debt adverse, what's that statistic out there right now, Ian, that I don't know if it's Arizona or nationally, but only 20% of future jobs will require a college degree?
So, and this is, I think, back to some of the other conversation about what are some of the factors. It's actually how we define college. And I don't want to cite that specific statistic, but more importantly, I think the one that the governor and others have moved forward with Achieve 60, which is a more, I think, holistic definition of what we call college, and they're referring to it as it's broader, it's post-secondary. Mm-hmm. So sometimes when we're in conversations with parents or even employers, they'll say, well, we don't require, we didn't know that Pima had this. We thought that you were a college. And we'll say, well, we are a college. What do you mean? Well, we didn't know that colleges had construction programs. So there's this disconnect about how we define college. And if we define college as anything that requires post-secondary training or training, certification, knowledge, and skills after you graduate from high school, it's around 60%. We trend about 25 to 30% of the occupations in Arizona actually requiring a bachelor's degree. And from a quantity perspective, we actually graduate the number of people in Arizona with a bachelor's degree that are required for the labor market. It's the area of what we call the middle skills, where there are certifications, associate degrees, or even just industry licensures that we are actually falling short by about 10% in the state.
And on the employer side, I often, when I see just a job rec or a general job description that has this really blanketed bachelor's degree on it, my first question is, what does that tell you about the person and why? If it's not a real specified type of degree or type of certification or type of skill set that they earned at that education level, I'm always going to ask, why are we, is that really an effective way of screening, and is that getting us who we need, or is that just shortening our pool?
So my political science degree, as an example,
probably. My communication degree. Why? Why?
No. I'm probably one of the few that actually uses that degree.
I started out as poli-sci, yeah.
So Devin, we pointed out earlier that you're one of the co-chairs for the Tucson Metro Chamber's Talent Attraction Task Force. Mm-hmm. So what are the main goals that you hope to accomplish leading that effort over the next 6 months?
So really timely question, because we just all got together and talked about what do we want 2019 to look like or be focused on. And I think that we really boiled it down to three buckets. So it originally started as really, why don't people want to be in Tucson? That was kind of the question that was asked. How do we get people to like Tucson? We Google poorly. People don't want to come here. What do we do about it? And we've sort of evolved it now for 2019, I think, to be a little more broad in how we're looking at it and really put it into three categories of there's still the talent attraction piece. So talent attraction being SEO, PR, getting people to Tucson, and then also getting people to not move from Tucson. I just signed up for the Tucson Young Professionals brain drain discussion that they're going to have about why people leave for middle career. Why do they feel that it's not available to them here? So we've got to address some of that stuff. Then there's workforce development, which Ian is going to be much better at talking about the initiatives around that. But, you know, how do we fill the skills gap? And how do we really know, not just anecdotally, but statistically, what the employers in town need? And there, Pima's on that. And then employer development was something that we really thought was what was missing from how we were looking at it all. How do our employers who have, in a small market, gone from being small to mid-size and done okay with how they've addressed talent before, get competitive? How do they really start to attract, and not just attract, but develop talent? How do they create pick-your-own-adventure career paths instead of linear career paths? How do they envision their growth? And then how do also workforce development, like what PCC is offering, how can they help training programs for the employers? Like what you're doing with some of them in town. So those are the key buckets. And within those buckets, we've got some summits and some education and different pieces we're pulling together And then on the talent attraction side, really pulling together all of the voices that are trying to raise Tucson synergistically so that we can all kind of talk the same and keep putting better messages out there to get people here, get people to stay.
So Devin said that you, Ian, can address kind of those workforce development pieces. What would you envision over the next 6 months in trying to work with the chamber in addressing the needs that we've been hearing about?
I think for the 6 months question, the initiative that we've already commenced meets many of the things that we're talking about, and that is the Southern Arizona Veterans Workforce Initiative. And what we're doing with that initiative and in working with Michael and staff is utilizing some very powerful software that's out there with respect to skill identification among veterans, and then the skills analysis of jobs that exist with our employers who are Metro Chamber members or others, and then seeing what that gap is. So it goes back to some of the things that Devin even spoke about certain qualifications or the wording of things on job postings means something specific to that employer, but may be interpreted or mean something different to another employer or to the job seeker. And so what this software does is allows us to get past all of those biases and thoughts and boil it down to the core. Equally, it helps identify the gap. So maybe they have 75% of the skills required for the job. Where do they get the other 25%? So that's with our partners that are involved. If they're high school still, it'd be with JTED, but also with the University of Arizona or a Pima Community College, and helping to plug that gap. That really allows us to get a little bit more efficient with identifying skills gaps and how we address those. So from that pilot, we look to expand it to get some more data and then see how we can utilize that software across one of the more challenging and difficult populations that we must work with workforce development in Tucson, and that is the non-participants in the labor market. Mm-hmm. So not to get too geeky with the conversation, but that's the what we call sometimes the real unemployment rate, which right now it's actually improved, but it still hovers around 20% of the eligible workforce in Tucson is not participating in the labor market. So helping to quantify and identify those skills moving forward will be crucial.
And I want to bounce off the software piece too, because that's one of the initiatives I know that's important to what we're doing. But outside of that workforce analysis, you know, pipelines of candidates and candidate events and all of the things that go on that everybody goes to in different ways is so decentralized right now. It's no wonder people can't find who they need. It's not always that they're not out there. It's that I don't have time to go to 15 different places to find them. And so this hopefully is an opportunity to have a unique pipeline that employers can tap into. I'm excited to help my clients tap into it, and I'm excited to be a part of it developing and getting implemented.
Well, and just as a recap, that Veterans Workforce Initiative really came to a head on October 23rd at Pima Community College. So thank you very much, Ian, for being not only one of the sponsors, but also the host of the event. But we had 92 veterans sign up for the program. We had 13 companies post 50 positions. On that afternoon, on October 23rd, it was rainy, which is a bit odd for Tucson sometimes. But there were 50 interviews conducted. And of that, 34 veterans were placed into jobs. That's a 68% hiring rate, which is fantastic. I mean, Amber and I like to talk about the fact that traditional job fairs, like you were talking about, Devin, in the month of October alone, there were 12.
So there's your decentralization.
So there's your decentralization.
And then go online.
Right.
Exactly.
So if we could have compounded those numbers of folks that attended the job fair mm-hmm. with those that went online to one of the other, you know, web-based job-finding things, if we were to scale that 68% success rate, we could have placed hundreds of folks into fantastic jobs and on a pipeline to a career.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But that, I guess, begs the question, too. So we have sort of these old technologies or old traditional things that we've done in job fairs. And, you know, back in the day, if you if you're an employer, you had a job, you put it in the newspaper and the classifieds, and that job seeker got their paper every morning and they opened it and, you know, circled which one they were going to interview for. Today we have not only the decentralization, it seems, in the job fairs, but also a decentralization in terms of all the different technologies that exist. I mean, we have Indeed, we have, I can't even remember. I was going to say Tinder, but that's definitely not a employer job seeker platform.
I don't know if there's a swipe left or right job platform yet, but
maybe,
you know, but maybe I need to copyright that real quick.
You exactly. may need to. But I guess for you, Devin, I mean, when you're working mm-hmm. with clients, I mean, you know, there's so much stuff out there.
Well, Google, we just talked about that as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Google.
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, the key is what is the system that's going to be usable within that client? So first of all, I need to understand who the hiring managers are. The hiring managers are decentralized. Let's say a customer service type industry where it needs to be efficient and effective, and they don't need to be spending time on really complicated software. There's stuff to go for that. And then otherwise for corporate hiring or other types of companies, there's software to implement. And what you do is you centralize all of that output coming from one software position, and all of the input comes into one. So when we were talking about the Futures Inc. software, it's how do we help chamber member employers utilize that in a way that has an API bridge so that it's not another place they have to go out to, rather it's coming into their software.
API is?
What does API stand for? I don't know, but it's the way software talks to each other.
Gotcha. Okay.
But yeah, so you just make sure as you're implementing these tools that you've got a one and go place for the employer and a one and post place. And then there's also within it ways to leverage how they vet, how they screen, how they move people or disposition them through, and even onboard. And you can do that in one place if you do it right and you know who you are and what you need. And so that's what I help people do.
Oh, we just found out that API is a set of functions and procedures allowing the creation of applications that access the features or data of an operating. See, this definition doesn't even help me.
My definition is pretty right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Software. It's how software talks to each other.
I like that better.
That's way better.
Me too. I like it.
And Futures does have a bridge. And so the key then is how does the employer, you know, get that to feed in? And so it's not yet another place they have to go.
Yeah, and I think that we need to go back to the purpose of why are we wanting to address all of this? And it's the talent attraction and retention piece. And I think, you know, here we are on Tucson Business Radio that does have a national platform. And I think it's important for folks to understand why we're so excited about Tucson. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what we've been hearing from our partners at Visit Tucson is once someone visits Tucson, there's a higher than 80% chance that they are going to return back to Tucson. And, you know, you look around this table right here, there's five of us, and there's only one Tucson native sitting here where all of us have moved. I mean,
and I was gone for 13 years.
Right.
But I'm back.
Yeah. Right. And so then we also have, you know, our Tucson Business Radio partner here, Mark Bishop, who hails from Australia, which certainly is a little bit further away than most of us. Myself from Texas, Ian, California. And actually, so Devin, you're a Tucson native?
I'm third generation. Yeah.
So we have two Tucson natives.
Two Tucson natives.
But my father's not on my mom's side. Yeah. But I left for about 13 years after college for career. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I have the reverse story. I left Texas, came here for college and never left, but I married a Tucson native.
There you go.
And I think that is kind of the factor is Tucson is an amazing place to, you know, raise families. And I think that's what I'm excited about doing is telling our story, is telling, you know, across the country all of the amazing and unique things that we have in Tucson that I think is underheard, if that's a thing. And take today. It's, 70 degrees out, mm-hmm. clear skies, and yet it was snowing in Tucson a week ago, which I think most would find. That's the unusual part.
That's very unusual.
You know, but we have a very unique culture here and very welcoming, and we have a million people. We are certainly on the growing end, but we our competitors are not going to be, you know, the big cities of the world, because we have something unique and different to ourselves, which is a fantastic fit for so many. Mm-hmm. So let's kind of talk about some of those things that we have encountered. We've had recent articles over even just the last couple of weeks from tourists coming in, and we was it not the New York Times, Wall Street Journal has been picking up some.
I think we were in the Times a couple times.
We have been in the, yeah, we were in the New York Times twice last year. Mm-hmm. But we were also, there was a recent article that talked about how Tucson made 11 national lists for a variety of things, whether related to food or the sort of atmosphere or the attractions. Mm-hmm. But there were 11 lists that we made last year in the sort of the top 10.
And a lot of it outdoors, food.
Cycling.
Mm-hmm. Cycling. Millennials, we'll say it again, food. They really like food, pictures, and we're very Instagrammable.
We are very Instagrammable. And even Diane Keaton purchased a house, you know, right in the barrio in the heart of downtown.
Which is beautifully Instagrammable neighborhood.
Yes. Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, to Amber's point, we're also not unique in the sense that all these other communities are also trying to do the same thing.
Right.
Right. And we also cannot, from an employer standpoint or an economic development standpoint, just sell the 70 degree weather on January 8th.
Exactly.
So it has to be much more than that. It has to be opportunities, and opportunities more relate to jobs, I think, than anything else, which kind of gets us back around to what opportunities exist out there. How do we more effectively advertise these opportunities, which, again, gets to some of the talent attraction stuff you were mm-hmm. talking about, Devin.
Right. And how are our companies, our large and mid-sized companies out here, putting themselves out nationally? What is their marketing, employment brand, and PR plan?
Yeah, and really, that's the catalyst of what started the Talent Attraction Task Force at the Chamber, as mm-hmm. we've talked to, and I'm not going to name them, but, you know, a ginormous company that has been recruiting internally within their organization and across the world folks to come to Tucson. But there's all these misconceptions. So mm-hmm. there's obviously whatever is being put out there.
Right.
Isn't being framed well.
Well, and even locally, I'll bring up the companies that I'm hearing as I was digging back into Tucson and what's going on and all these companies I'm hearing about. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we've got them and we've got this going on over here. Local people don't know that that's happening here. So how are we need to get on our PR game, right, a little bit. I think that's part of it.
I think that's a great point.
Yeah, I agree. And then so myself, it was a similar experience. Came here on a family vacation and had no idea what I would encounter, and that we would have 8 to 9,000 foot mountains around. So it fit our interests really well. And so when the opportunity to work for our chancellor and then the position came up, it was an immediate, you know, no-brainer for my family and for me. Similarly, every time we bring somebody here now, so we've become the vacation destination for all of our family tree, both in California and in Texas. And no matter what time of year, even if it's in the hot part of the year, the first thing they say is, wow, it's beautiful. And that is something unique. And there are other beautiful places as well that we compete against. But then they start to get really interested when we drive around, and even, you know, a lot of regions are identified by what their competitive base is with respect to industry. And it's not to favor one industry over another. Like we talked about earlier, all of the jobs are important, from the service sector all the way on up to the highest level of engineering or medical professions. But what is our core identification, not only in terms of our natural beauty and our natural resources, and then the people, which are great, but the industries that are defining us, and what's that flavor? And what I'm really excited about, and what we start to hear about in workforce and economic development circles, are the things about aerospace and defense, about emerging technologies, about some of the IT things that are starting to come out, including innovation and entrepreneurship, and a lot of this technological infusion, whether it's in bioscience or again, aerospace and defense or optics that are really starting to come out. And I'm actually having people now in from California or in Texas and across the nation reach out about those things now, not just, okay, so when can we come and vacation?
Yeah, when can we go
again in Tucson? Yeah. So the more we can make it a both and, I'm going to back to that what millennials are looking for that we talked about at the beginning, which is the economic quality of life and then the things that make life enjoyable once you come home. So that work-life balance. The more I think that we're going to continue to do well in attracting the talent that we need. But we have to be realistic also about wages in respect of what sorts of wages people are willing to move for. Mm-hmm. So there's a certain strata of occupations that once you bring them to Tucson, and there have been a lot of announcements from large employers that bring those sorts of occupations, then the supply chain and some of the technical or service stuff that feeds those occupations then starts to draw, come in as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, something else I've been digging a lot into is, as the talent store is expanding, we're looking at how do we help launching companies. So they're past startup and they're ready to launch. And what I'm finding is we have an incredible supportive startup ecosystem coming up in Tucson, which is really exciting for people. There's a lot of support for entrepreneurship. And by the way, it's not as hard to be an entrepreneur in Tucson as it is in San Francisco. You can pay rent here. And still survive as an entrepreneur. So there's different ways that we need to frame the ecosystem out there. And in fact, there's a lot more venture capitalists coming into the Southwest, but previously, and still some telling the story that, you know, we can't give you capital until you move to the Silicon Valley. Well, you know, they're changing their mind, and there's a lot of reasons for that, and they're building infrastructure around that world, which is exciting.
And you definitely hit on something I'm going to relate it to retention. And you talked about that as one of those core focus areas for the Chamber's Talent Attraction Task Force of here's the different things we want to address. And you mentioned on employer retention. Mm-hmm. Well, I would also argue not just the employer, but retention community-wide. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about how sitting at this table, we have U of A graduates. There's three right here. And I came here and went to the U and stayed, but I wasn't from here. Mm-hmm. Michael graduated from the U and stayed. And then you, which I think was probably the more common factor, is you graduated from the U and you left, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And we've heard the statistic where U of A actually does pretty well with retention, to where about 60% of their students do stay in Tucson. Do stay in the state.
I did stay in the state.
Well, there you go. You're fitting right in that. And I guess statistics show that 30% stay in the college town, 30% go back to their hometown. And so I think that that's probably where we're getting our 60% is because we are a college town and so many, wildcats are born and raised. So what I'm getting at is retaining those folks, not from the employer perspective, and it's not, you know, because it is a fantastic career, but it's also affordability. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the most under-talked about topics for those college students that are graduating is, yes, they do want to go out and they want to find their dream and they want to explore and all of these things that all of us experienced back in, you know, our college years in one way or another. But they're going off to Portland and Seattle and Denver and Austin. And when you look at those cost of living, it doesn't compare.
Well, they have to do it while their backs are still strong enough to couch surf initially, right? Do it while you're young and you don't need a lot of space.
Well, we did a roundtable with one of our local CEOs who has two sons that both graduated with the same exact engineering degree from the U of A. One stayed, and now it's probably been 5 or 10 years since they graduated, and probably not that many, probably about 5 years. And the one that stayed recently bought a home and got married, and then the other son left for San Francisco and has been still supported by his parents during those whole 5 years, is now going to be moving back because simply can't afford it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how telling is that story of exact same degree? Yes, Tosun does have these jobs, but how do you find it when everything is so decentralized and there's this misconception that perhaps we don't have those open jobs? And then how does our cost of living impact all of that?
I think, yeah, and it, a lot of that goes together. I mean, as we develop economically, the cost of living is going to shift a little bit, right? And so we can't hang our hat totally on that.
Sure.
Because the hope is that
grow our economy.
All ships rise.
That's right. Exactly.
Right? Yep. But, you know, there's a lot to be said for that. And I think it's a valid point. And hopefully people will start, you know, moving around. But we've got to have mid-career opportunity, too. And I think anecdotally, we are really good at getting interns to transition into jobs and get their first couple years under their belt. But where is that mid-career path and that succession plan? And so I think that that's part of what hopefully we'll address for the chamber in terms of that employer development and how they are looking at their ecosystems.
This is fantastic. Any closing remarks, you guys?
At PIMBA, we're really excited. Under the leadership of our Chancellor, Lee Lambert, and our Board of Governors, we have really shifted strategically to making sure that we are not just focusing on one aspect of higher education. It's an important aspect, but that's transfer to the universities. But what are we doing to ensure that we are training for what are called the middle skill jobs that can oftentimes pay just as high or higher than those with baccalaureate degrees? And through our centers of excellence and some of the things that we've discussed today, you'll continue to see, our work is not done, so you'll continue to see a shift and you'll continue to see improvements from your community college with respect to meeting the employer's needs. If there are any employers out there who need to visit with me or with a member of my team, the easiest way to reach us is workforce@pima.edu. Again, that's workforce@pima.edu.
And Devin, Talent Store.
Yes. So I'm really excited to be plugged in and with the synergy and everything that's going on. And in terms of looking at your own employment strategy, talent strategy, or just your ability to scale, it's yourtalentstore.com. And I'm pretty easy to find. I'm running around town all the time.
That's terrific. Mr. Guymond.
Well, short of singing the song that Madeline Kahn sang in Blazing Saddles, I'm tired of playing the game. This just, you know, this conversation, just the way Devin laid it out, it's both exciting and exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is going to take a lot of work. I think we've laid a lot of really good groundwork in the work that we've done over the last year and a half, kind of getting to this point. But now the real work starts in terms of, like you talked about, you know, engaging the employers, working on that employer development so that, you know, they can do the things that they need to do to not only grow their business, but also, you know, delve into some of the things that will retain their employees and grow their employees. The things that revolved around working with the city of Tucson, Pima County, many of our other partners as it relates to this whole talent attraction effort, not resting on our laurels that we're a gorgeous community, an Instagrammable community. I think that's going to be the hashtag of today. But that we really become, you know, talking about that place of opportunity for that sort of mid-level career, and working to really get that word out through those search engine optimization, those SEOs mm-hmm. that you talked about earlier, making sure that we do Google well. And then, of course, working with our great educational partners, the U of A and Pima Community College and ASU have already been very instrumental, particularly, I would say, and Pima Community College in really transitioning and sort of morphing your business model to making sure that you are truly addressing the workforce needs of our industry. So hats off to Ian, you and your team, and Dr. Lambert, of course, but really working with the rest of the educational partners. And I don't want to leave JTED out too, because we talked about your son hypothetically, of course, becoming a plumber. But there are a lot of kids out there who are trying to figure out what they want to do. And that also, to maybe your point, Devin, getting into working with the employers, to making sure that they are reaching out to the students in the schools today, mm-hmm. making sure that they are aware of the opportunities that exist in our community, getting them excited about that, making, you know, it's not just the college track for everyone. There are other tracks out there, and there are a lot of exciting opportunities and exciting careers out there. So,
well, and it's not either or tracks. You know, it's they are parallel tracks that overlap at different times. And as I'm listening to everyone talk, and we're saying here we are a couple of years, not even a couple of years, but decades into solving this problem as it has ebbed and flowed. And I was thinking about how the chamber has been around 126 years. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll be working on this problem for the next 50 years, but really to be most effective is going to be that collective impact. And so, you know, I really appreciate, you know, Devin, you coming here on largely representing the private sector of your clients, Ian being here from the community college perspective. And we know that Dr. Robbins at U of A and Dr. Crow at ASU, you know, we are all trying to work hand in hand in addressing the workforce development through our state, through JTED. And I think it's the private sector that has to really step it up to identify those needs and partner and invest.
And I think, you know, just really quick to the members of the chamber, you guys are going to get the expertise needed, or at least the support and the commitment to become competitive. You know, you're expert in your service lines. You're expert in the business you deliver. You don't have to be expert at the talent piece too. And that's something the chamber is really trying to work hard to offer their members, which is exciting.
Thank you guys. Until next month.
Thank you.